The Majority Report, where the truth comes to party. BS need not apply. BS tried to apply, but we rejected its application. The left just got a little bit louder on The Majority Report.
All right, it is Wednesday, November 24th, 2010. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report broadcasting live from the literal but not metaphorical shadow of the New York Times building in... Have we established where we are?
I still think it's Midtown.
I don't think it's Midtown. I think it's Hell's Kitchen.
Dorsey looks like he has an opinion.
I don't know New York well enough, really.
How long have you been here, Dorsey?
About 3 years.
All right. Well, I've been here for 14. So, I guess 16. We're near a Port Authority. I don't know what more to tell you, people. Somebody has a better description. We've got it. The problem is none of us take cabs. We will once we get the membership up a little bit more. But at the moment, we're not taking cabs. And so we can't look at that little passenger safety map that tells us what the name of the area that we're in is. But we're in that area. We've got a great show for you today. Matt Taibbi will be joining us. Just a little house cleaning. Tomorrow we'll be running at least one, maybe two interviews of Chalmers Johnson, recently departed Chalmers Johnson, author of The Sorrows of Empire, Blowback. One interview actually includes David Cross, weirdly enough. Back in the day on the Majority Report, we used to have guest hosts occasionally. Cross wasn't very good, but it's nice to hear his voice. And I'll also, I think, include an interview I did on the great Ring of Fire with Wendell Potter. He's back in the news. This was an interview I did with him about a year and a half ago. Maybe it was a year ago. And then on Friday, I will replay some book interviews that we did during the Sam's Cedar on Sundays. And then we'll be back live on Monday with brand new shows. But these other shows are going to be interesting, folks. You're going to enjoy them. I insist. And Dorsey is now monitoring our feed at Majority FM on Twitter and our email at majorityreporters@gmail.com for your questions. I will be answering a little later here your advice needs for when you go home for Thanksgiving. We've got a bunch of great questions. We're going to answer them. Some of them are disturbing. Some of them are disturbing when they talk about their family. Matt Taibbi is going to be with us a little bit later. And we're going to be talking to a representative from the TSA. They're in the midst of a big push, apparently, to don't blame them, to help people move through the process quicker. It is National Opt-Out Day, and I think they're, frankly, I think they're peeing their pants right now, as it were. Also, I want to remind you, Just Coffee at justcoffee.coop. Put in Majority into the coupon code, 10% discount. Evan and Dorsey, already huge Just Coffee fans. We had one guy who became, I think, a Cedarista, right? A Majority Report member. And all he wanted was me to ship him Just Coffee. And I was like, all right, great. I mean, he's going to get the full access and whatnot, but he said, I've already bought all your movies. I love that Just Coffee. Can't get it in Canada. Apparently, it's illicit. We can't get their prescription drugs. They can't get our Just Coffee. That's the way it works. That was the trade-off.
Fair is fair.
That was the trade-off. Let's just start quickly with some bad economic news. Great. Like you needed more. The Fed has lowered its expectation for growth and employment in 2012. They now expect an unemployment to remain above 9% in 2011 and above 8% in 2012.
Surprise, surprise.
Bad news for Barack Obama's political situation, of course, but worse news for those people who are going to be out of work. And generally, I don't think the Fed has been, let's put it this way, pessimistic in their projections. So we should be so lucky. And, of course, the Republicans are going to quash any attempt to provide people with unemployment insurance or to restart the economy because that's in their political best interest. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to this representative from the TSA. It is, well, it's not casual Friday, but it's sort of like it's casual Wednesday because it's the day before we're all going home for the holiday and having some turkey. All right, we'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Cedar with the Majority Report on the phone. Samuel Stewart, he is a communications liaison for the TSA. Welcome to the Majority Report. Appreciate you coming on.
Thanks a lot. No problem at all.
Can we get a little more volume? Thank you. Okay, so Mr. Stewart, let me ask you a couple of questions here. You know, there's a lot of talk about these how do you pronounce the company? Is it Rapiscan or Rapiscan that developed these machines?
You got to consider a fruit or a vegetable. It's more ripe. It's kind of more pronounced with a ripe, a ray, or a ripe. Depending on which regional accent you have, I think it kind of comes out differently. But it's Rapiscan. That's how we pronounce it.
All right. Thank you. Well, let me ask you this. Now, supposedly, we were contacted because the TSA has plans to speed people through this process.
Right.
Tell me something. How do you speed people through a process if they don't want to go through this machine, which supposedly gives them cancer? How is it that you intend to speed up the process, particularly, with all due respect, on opt-out day?
Well, in considering opt-out day and our preparations for this, Sam, what we at the TSA have done is to explore several options to try to increase the rapidity of flyers, travelers, to get through the process appropriately, completely, and rapidly. And what it's going to require, first and foremost, for the flyers is to spend a little bit of extra time in CVS or Rite Aid or Walgreens, wherever they happen to get their travel sizes to travel with, and not only pick up their deodorants, their toothpaste, etc., the other sundry items they'll need to travel. They're also going to have to consider buying essential oils, which now are coming packaged in travel size. You get a variety of different essential oils.
Wait a second, I'm sorry. Did you say essential oils or sensual oils?
Sensual oils are indeed essential oils when it comes to going through individualized screening process, which is the hands-on process that we're going to be administering. By lathering oneself up and any other flyers that might be with the party, you're going to talk about a quicker, smoother search. A lot of people are considering baby powder, talcum powders. Like that will not work. What we're looking for, preferably a scented. This doesn't have to be a painful process for our travelers. They put on some nicely scented, sensual oils, lathered onto the body, the entire body. This way, each one of our officers, each one of our agents, are going to be able to thoroughly search your person, ensure the safety of all travelers, and get through this process in a rapid and enjoyable way.
Wait a second. I'm sorry. Are you suggesting that people wear like sex oils for what purpose?
You know, it's a new age, Sam, and there are different uses for different products. We're constantly evolving as consumers and as travelers and as people. Yeah, maybe people might at one time have used these sensual oils for intimate physical pleasure, but in the privacy of their home. But this is war. Our freedom is at stake. Our safety is at stake, indeed. That would be a correct answer. But the use of these particular items is different. Remember, in World War II, tin foil was used as a food wrap before World War II. Once the Nazis began to show their strength, we used tin foil to build airplanes. So you're constantly changing up your game. A couple of the things your travelers and listeners might want to consider is wearing loose-fitting garments. Also, CVS, Rite Aid, Walgreens, a lot of shoppers don't realize this. They have a clothing section. It's not a large clothing section. It's not the best.
So what's the purpose of wearing loose-fitting garments?
Access, primarily. That's where our agents will be able to access any regions, orifices in the body that would be able to, you know, hold a stick of dynamite, you know, any kind of TNT or explosive powders. A lot of these things are going to be in areas that...
So you're saying that... Wait a second. Let me see if I can get this straight, because this is starting to sound a little strange to me. You're saying that people can speed through the process if they wear loose-fitting clothing and bathe themselves and slather themselves in sensual oils.
And wear either thong or teabag-style undergarments. This just gives us more access. It speeds up the process. Women have no problem going to Vicky Secret, where my wife goes for me often, to get her thong. Men may not be aware there is a male version of a thong, sometimes called the banana hammock. Putting this particular garment not only on the adults but the children is going to ease the rapidity of the speed.
A thong on children? Wait a second. I mean, all right. Is there anything? Okay. So thongs on children and
sensual oils.
Yeah.
Adults, children, adolescents, grandparents. This is not exclusive to just the parental unit, the adult. Grandma's got to wear one. Grandpa's got to wear one. Great-grandma, if she's still living. Grandmothers oftentimes still have slips. They're not...
All right, all right. We don't need to get this detailed about it. Is there anything else that can help people as they go through the line that will help them in this process?
Close your eyes. Breathe deeply and slowly. Relax your body. If any of nature's process begins to happen during the search, don't be embarrassed. Don't be embarrassed at all. This is to be expected, and it may be an opportunity to it's like getting a shoulder massage, you know, that we see in airports all the time. You might get a little bit of a release, so to speak, as you're going.
All right, that's fine. Okay, thank you. I appreciate
that.
Thank
you very much.
Yeah.
God bless America.
Yeah,
great. States.
Great. Thank you.
Thank
okay.
You,
thank you for the call. That's
you're very welcome.
Astonishing. Anytime. Thank you, Mr. Samuel
Stewart. Stewart. S-E-W-A-R-D.
Yes.
Stewart.
All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate your joining us to help us move through the line, I guess, on opt-out day.
Slide through the line.
What? Slide through the line? God. Well, so if you're flying today, enjoy yourselves. Apparently, the TSA recommends that you use sensual oils and loose-fitting clothes with a banana hammock or some other type of, what was it called? the skimpy bathing suits underneath or whatever it is. Wow. I don't know really what to say about that. Let's go to answering a couple of the questions. Right off the bat, we're going to answer more. Maybe we can get Matt Taibbi to help us answer some of these questions. But let's start with D. Williams MH from Twitter. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. Zol2 on Twitter. Here's one. Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. How do you deal with this when you're sitting with your right-wing relatives? Hey, pass the sweet potatoes. Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. And you say no. Uncle Insane. Uncle Insaney. Social Security is not a Ponzi scheme. What is a Ponzi scheme? It was named after some Italian guy. I think his name is Ponzi. And the idea is that people who put new money into a supposed investment that's going to give you wonderful returns, they get the money that people have put in before or after them. So, okay, Dorsey, you give me $5. I say, I'm going to have $10 for you tomorrow. And then later in the day, I say to Evan, you give me $15, and I'm going to have $20 for you tomorrow. So I take Evan's money, and I give you 10, Dorsey, and I keep going like that. I find another person to get these returns, and I keep pumping out the new money that comes in from people, goes to pay out the people who have already put it in, and I skim some off the top. And this will work until I've run out of people. And that is the primary difference between Social Security and a Ponzi scheme. One of the other ones is that we're not promising huge returns. It's actually retirement insurance. And the other one is that we will not run out of people. I guess it's conceivable that the world will be hit by a meteor. There will be no more American workers at that point because we'll all be dead to pay off Social Security. But then those people who want to receive Social Security will also be dead. And the reason why Ponzi schemes always fail is because at one point you run out of people who are willing to join into the program. The reason why Social Security has been the single most effective government program in this country over the past 70 years is because there's always new workers to replace old workers.
Hey, but pass the mashed potatoes, and don't you know what Rush Limbaugh is saying about the number of workers for retirees?
That's correct. There are more retirees, or an increasing number of retirees, relative to workers in the workforce. And that is because of the baby boom. This is a one-time demographic blip that was, in fact, you know, the people who set this up are not morons. You can tell when a lot of people are born and then predict 65 years out when they're going to retire. So in the early 1980s, you can tell Grandpa Insane that his hero, St. Ronald Reagan, or Ronaldus Maximus, whatever they like to call it. And you should say that. You should refer to him as Ronaldus Maximus, because then they'll think, oh, wait a second. If he refers to Ronald Reagan in that same Latin way that Rush Limbaugh does, then he must be on the same wavelength. You say, Ronaldus Maximus was very smart. One of his smartest things he ever did was set up the Social Security Commission with the maestro, Alan Greenspan, who knew that there was going to be this demographic shift, so they raised Social Security payroll taxes to build a trust fund, a rainy day fund, a demographic blip fund, whatever you want to call it, and they started to raise more money than they needed and put it into this fund. And this fund has over $2 trillion in it. Now it has treasury bills because it was raided, but those treasury bills are just like any other treasury bills, full faith and credit of the United States government. And unless we allow people to allow the United States to default as to what it owes Social Security beneficiaries, that money will be there. That trust fund was built up for this very period of time. So a combination of increased productivity – by workers and an anticipation that we would go through this blip has now made Social Security completely rock solid for the next 27 years. And after that, if we do nothing, it will still pay out 80% of benefits until everyone around your table is dead, including the kids, without being creepy about it. And so if your Uncle Crazy is talking about Social Security, 27 years, that's not enough. Ask him to look around the table and tell you who will be there in 27 years. There's no way to know. Will this house still be standing in 27 years? Will we be living on beachfront property because of global warming in 27 years? We don't know. So that's how you respond to Social Security. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Matt Taibbi about his latest book, about his latest article in the Rolling Stone, and maybe we'll have him answer a couple of these questions, how he deals with right-wingers around his house during Thanksgiving. Maybe he doesn't have any. Maybe he doesn't have any family. I don't know. We're going to have to ask him. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report in the literal, if not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building and, of course, Port Authority, where we always, the entire staff goes out and enjoys a lunch after the show. On the phone, it's a pleasure to welcome to this iteration of the Majority Report, a frequent guest on Majority Report 1.0, Matt Taibbi. Columnist for Rolling Stone and author of the new book, Griftopia, Bubble Machines, Vampire Squids, and the Long Con That Is Breaking America. Welcome to the program, Matt.
What's going on, Sam? Metaphorical shadow of the New York Times. I never heard that before.
We're in the literal shadow as opposed to the metaphorical.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Let me turn up a little volume. Is that better for you, Evan?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a couple of things I want to talk to you about, and then maybe I'm hoping, we've had people basically send me emails and Twitters as to how they would address their right-wing family members at Thanksgiving. And you've been dealing a lot with Tea Partiers, so maybe you can help us out on a couple of those questions. But before,
yeah, I don't know. I'll try, but go ahead.
All right. Well, before we get there, first off, when is the new book? Is the book out? Is coming out soon?
It's out, actually.
Oh.
It's out, and it's a bestseller already, believe
it
or not.
Oh, well, congratulations. I apologize for my staff.
No, that's all right. That's all right.
I actually quoted the book the other day in a conversation that I was having with Digby about the Tea Party and about, actually, the QE2 video that is up. And the cartoon one. And I'm interested on your take on that because I know you've blogged about it, but one of the things that Digby and I were talking about was how that video in particular, aside from hitting it correctly on a couple of things, at least its suspicion of certain entities, also sort of promotes this idea that inflation is bad, necessarily evil, and that deflation is a good thing, and
mm-hmm.
it it led us both to almost simultaneously quote a passage from your book about the problem that we have now is not necessarily a left-right one, but a complexity issue. And there are certain elements of our society that completely leave the train at that point and start their own sort of narrative that is just simpler.
Right, yeah, yeah. Well, no, that's absolutely true. I mean, I think the central message I would say to my entire book is just that our economy has now gotten to the point where you need to have actual expertise in a lot of these fields just to know what's going on. I think most people don't have the ability anymore to make rational political decisions about their economic future, just because the economy has gotten so unbelievably complicated that it's just too hard for most people. So they look for simpler narratives, and you know the Tea Party has been very skillful at giving people simple explanations for what's going on, and you know the other side hasn't. So I think that's the big issue.
Yeah, I mean it's pretty shocking. I mean I was sent that video by a very left person, and I just wrote back. I said, you know, you realize that deflation's fun for about a week or two until it starts affecting your wages. And all that happens in deflation is that bond owners maintain the value of their wealth, and the rest of us get screwed because they don't make their money on those wages.
Yeah, well, obviously there's that age-old question about, you know, whom does inflation benefit and to whom is it a real horror? Obviously, inflation is always a bigger problem for the rich because it's a method of shifting wealth from one place to another when you have inflation. And every time you have an inflationary period, it just means that there's economic instability, and in a way, there's opportunity for people who have less to get more, because you can easily buy assets and watch them inflate in value quickly, and it punishes people who have assets already. So there's always been this celebration, this worship of the idea of keeping inflation down, and you know that's been the mantra of you know Alan Greenspan and people like that for decades, because that's the number one. I mean, that's the number one goal of people who have money is to reduce inflation and to keep the stability of assets under management.
Now, so we have this problem where the economic reality we're facing in this country is so complex that people can't make political choices on it. So what is there a fix for this, or are we just sort of just wait until, you know, that comet hits us?
Well, I think there are a couple of things here. Number one, I think legislatively they have to continue to find ways to try to make things simpler than they are. I mean, this is a really, really tiny example, but you know, there was that proposal for the so-called plain vanilla contract, you know, for mortgages or for credit card. You know, in other words, the idea of forcing banks to offer people really, really simple contracts, or you know, for their mortgages instead of or credit cards instead of these 30-page contracts that are incomprehensible even to the lawyers who do this stuff for a living. You know, another example, I think, of a proposal that would be really interesting is to give people the option of getting a mortgage and you know and having the right to say you don't get to securitize this mortgage, or you don't get to dice it up and make it into securities. Like I want this loan to exist as a whole loan under your management for the entire life of the loan. You know, it would be great if we could simplify these things so that people did not have to all be tied into these incredibly complex financial instruments, because that's where we are right now. Everybody right now is invested in these, you know, mortgage-backed securities and derivatives, whether they like it or not. They just are. And I think it would be great if we could get to a place where that wasn't the situation.
But is that possible? You know, I'm
no.
Three-quarters – right. I mean –
yeah.
I'm three-quarters of the way from your piece that's going to be in Rolling Stone on the 25th, these courts helping banks screw over homeowners, where
right.
You basically sit in a a conference room in Florida where a, I guess, now unretired judge is more or less just sort of like rubber stamping all of these foreclosures until somebody steps in and says, hey, you know, this is obviously fraudulent. I mean, it's a really harrowing story. Tell us about it. Just give us the summation of this so that people can hear it in your words.
Yeah, just backing up quickly. Again, in the old days, when you got a mortgage, you were it was usually a local bank or a credit union that was lending you the mortgage. They cared who you were, like whether you existed or had a job or, you know, were a citizen, because they were going to hold that loan for the life of the loan, right? So they weren't going to lend you a $500,000 mortgage if you weren't a good credit bet. That all changed like 10, 15 years ago because they invented these new tools where banks could take like 500 or 1,000 of these loans, chop them up into securities, mismark them as AAA rated, and that's complicated, and then sell them off to these suckers like pension funds and Icelandic land banks and Dutch trade unions. You know, they sold that stuff as securities, and I'm getting to why to this court. Once they did that, once they committed this fraud of selling subprime mortgages, risky mortgages as AAA-rated securities to these third parties, they just stopped doing their paperwork. Like, why bother? Why bother doing the paperwork once you've committed the crime? So
right, because the idea here is that if the loan goes bad, it doesn't impact them at all. They've already shuttled it along.
Right, yeah, they don't own it anymore. You know, they 5 minutes after you do that closing, your original lender has sold it off, which is usually like a company like Countrywide. They've usually sold that loan off to somebody like Goldman Sachs, like literally within minutes after you close your house, right? And then that bank typically goes out and finds investors to sell the loan to within 90 days or so. So within 90 days after you close on your house, that your loan has already changed hands at least twice. And now, years later, if they're somebody's foreclosing on you, it's usually 5, 6, 10, 15 times that loan has changed hands. But all along that whole period, nobody was keeping up the paperwork. Nobody was transferring the note from one person to another. Because, you know, why bother? This was originally a crime. They were selling off something that was crap as AAA. Once they did that, they just didn't bother servicing it anymore. So what these courts are
now,
for...
Now, wait, let me ask you one more question before we get to the courts in that process.
Sure.
Is that where MERS came in, the electronic system that basically the banks instituted on their own authority to bypass the registration of that loan with counties or municipalities? Okay.
Exactly. And what's so funny about this is, there's a legal requirement every time you sell a mortgage... And this is a principle that goes all the way back to Old England, that you have to physically transfer the note from one person to the next. Not only that, but you have to register that your mortgage with all these various state entities, the county, the state, et cetera. MERS is an electronic registration system that actually marketed itself on its website as a cheaper alternative to the legal obligation. They actually said you will save money not doing all this legal stuff by passing the mortgages through MERS.
And they did save money, but it didn't make it any more legal.
Right? Yeah.
No authority to do that.
It saved a ton of money, but it was totally bogus.
Right. I mean, it would be essentially the functional equivalent of me just putting on a website, going like, "Hey, you know how it costs you a certain amount of money to file to get married? Well, I'm going to charge you half that price."
Right,
and
yeah,
and
exactly,
I will give you a stamp of CEDAR approval. You will be married.
With your picture on it.
Exactly. We should actually think about that for a membership level, Dorsey, so if you can work on something like that. All right, so that process takes place, and then at one point Joe Blow, who doesn't realize that his mortgage has been transferred 20 ways to Sunday and gone through all these different iterations and been sold and diced. He can't pay his loan. He defaults because either he overestimated his pay or just because the guy who sold him the loan was willing to say anything to him and convince him that, oh, yeah, don't worry about this whole sliding increase in interest rate or...
you can refi if that happens.
Right.
I told them that all the time.
Because nobody cared whether or not this guy was ever going to be able to make his payments because the person who sold him that loan is long gone out of the picture, has completely wiped his hands of the whole thing anyways.
Right, and they often inflated his appraisal too, because now that screws him because now he can't sell his house because it was really worth $280 and they inflated it to $350 and they gave him the extra amount of loan to pay for that, but you know now.
Right, his loans for $320,000, and then you add in an agent's fee, he would actually have to pay money to sell his house.
Right, exactly. So now he's in that situation, and he's defaulting, and they got a and the person who's the servicer of the note, in other words, the person who actually has bought the rights to manage this property, now they're trying to foreclose on this guy, right? But there's no paperwork. So what do? They that's where these robo-signers come in. They drag these pimply entry-level kids right out of college. They throw them in cubicles, and they say, we would like you to personally attest to the fact that there is a real chain of custody, you know, tracing the passage of this note from the origination to now. And then these guys make their stamp of approval on these documents, and then they go into court with these phony, dumbed-up documents. And they try to foreclose on these people.
Right. So they basically are saying, like, we've seen the chain of title, and it more or less goes like this, and I will attest to that.
Right.
That's it.
Because I've been working here for 5 minutes, and I am peripherally familiar with this person's with this person's history because I just got it 10 seconds ago, and then so now I can attest to it.
And
that's literally what they're doing.
And so in Florida, where they've had a huge backload of these cases, they've hired retired judges to sit in a room, and then and pick it up from here because it really is astonishing that if you don't have a lawyer sitting there representing you, which most people don't in that situation. It literally just gets the guy, that judge you sat there bragged about what, doing 25 an hour or something?
Yeah, he said that their goal was to clear 25 cases an hour. So, you know, firstly, you have to imagine there's no way legally that a judge can review a foreclosure file, you know, an affidavit of foreclosure in 2.5 minutes. There's no way he can check all that paperwork. You know, and legally say that it's a proper foreclosure, but that's what these courts are doing. They're saying we want to clear 25 cases an hour. The mandate is to clear cases, and according to the courts, a case isn't considered cleared until the property is sold again. So that means there's only one way you can rule to clear a case is you have to rule for foreclosure. So that's what they're doing. They're trying to foreclose on 25 properties an hour. And so this judge was sitting there, and he literally has a stack of these files. He'd open up the first page, kind of peruse it for a few seconds, and then just rubber stamp it, and that's a person getting kicked out of his home.
And what's amazing is that you know, you detailed this one case where the person who's being foreclosed has an attorney there, and the attorney's going, Judge, if you look at this, the timeline's completely wrong. You know, this guy says that. The mortgage was transferred from party A to party B in 2009, and then later says that the mortgage was transferred from party B to C in 2008. It doesn't, I mean, it's like, you know, there's no legitimate chain here. And the judge says, tell us what the judge says at that point, because this is what's really amazing.
Well, yeah, even going a little bit before that, before that bank came into the court with that screwed up chain of command, this just speaks to the general level of confidence of these people that they can't even manufacture phony documents correctly.
Right.
They originally came into court with a piece of paper that said, on the same page, it said, we are the owner and holder of the original mortgage note, and we have lost and are unable to locate the original mortgage note. They said that in the same sheet of paper. The judge was forced to throw that out. They came back with another document that had a doctored stamp on the back page. Then they came back with the thing that you're talking about, where it's A to B and B to C, except that B to C happened before A to B. And here's the amazing part, that the judge says, well, okay, I can't accept that. You're right, but I'm not going to dismiss with prejudice, of course. So here, you know, Mr. Bank, I'll give you 25 days to go back and come up with another set of papers that won't stink as much next time.
So for people who don't understand what that means, dismiss with prejudice, it says, just because you've lied to me doesn't mean I have any reason to not believe you next time you come in and lie. If you can lie just a little bit with a little bit more effort and a little bit more due diligence.
Right, right. And, you know, and the flip side of that, of course, is that that same judge I watched, you know, a few minutes later when a homeowner doesn't show up to defend himself in court, you know, it's over. It's the case is now closed. You know, they in essence rule with prejudice in that case against the homeowner. But when the banks screw up and commit what I think is criminal fraud, I mean, it's perjury when you come into court with phony documents. It's not a minor bookmaking offense. This is a jailable offense. And when they do it three times, they just say, okay, well, it's not good enough. Come back, you know, in a month. And they only do that when there's a lawyer there. If there's no lawyer there, they just don't even bother looking at the fraud and they just foreclose.
Yeah, no, I think you referred to this as too fraud to fail.
Right. Yeah, no. And it, here's the problem with this is that literally every single mortgage that was securitized during this entire period has this problem. So if they were to investigate all of this and properly, you know, adjudicate all of it, there would be so many indictments. I mean, the value of all these securities would plummet. It would be a massive systemic issue.
Let me ask you this. At what point does some entrepreneurial attorney, you know, take the next step from that that website, wheresmynote.com or whatever that was, and say, hi, are you a homeowner who's tired of paying your mortgage? Contact me. I will make sure that I will investigate whether or not anybody really owns the note to your home. And if not, we'll start proceedings right now, and you won't have to pay a dime.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to happen. And it already is happening. There are a lot of...
I got to get back to law school quick.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of foreclosure attorneys who are taking that very tack. The problem is that not many of the clients, there isn't a whole lot of money to be earned there just because the clients in question, you know,
right. I guess if you can't pay your mortgage, how are you going to pay your attorney? It doesn't matter at that point.
Right, right. So that's what you'd essentially be doing is you'd be paying your attorney instead of paying your mortgage.
But I'm saying, what if you're not being foreclosed upon? I mean, what's
right.
to stop me, who's not being foreclosed upon yet, to question who owns my note?
That is a very good question. And in fact, if you wanted to challenge the standing of, I mean, I don't know who you're paying your mortgage to, but if you wanted to go to court and say, I'm not sure that this person has a right to collect my mortgage payment, you'd probably have a good chance of winning that, I would think, because they're actually not the owners of your home. The owners of your home are the investors. This is complicated. When they took all these mortgages together and they threw them in these real estate trusts, right, and where they chopped up all these loans, and these investors came in and they bought shares in these real estate trusts, those investors own your home, but there's thousands of them. So
the problem is that the loan has been now divorced essentially from the mortgage, and so these loans, I still may own the money, but it's not collateralized with my house.
Right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. You're making a payment to a second party, who in turn is paying off investors. But you're right. The house is now kind of separated from the actual investors now.
Yeah, but of course, we all know that it's immoral for you to walk away from such an obligation unless you're a corporation, in which case that's your business. Right?
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
Isn't that the way it works?
Yeah, no, of course. I mean, and what's so funny about this is when these guys like Jamie Dimon and all these people saying, oh, we're not throwing people out of their houses who deserve to be there, blah, 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 you know, all of these banks, when they walked away from the paperwork, and again, as soon as they foisted off these fraudulent AAA rated securities on suckers in Holland or wherever, or pension funds, they fled the scene. They did exactly what they're accusing homeowners of doing.
Right.
They walked away. They stopped paying their obligations and taking care of those notes. And now they're coming back and blaming everybody else for doing the same thing. And so it's, yeah, you're right. It's total hypocrisy.
All right. So help us out here. Answer some questions for us, okay? Because everybody's heading home to the holidays. Some people have. Do you have time to do this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Everybody's heading home for the holidays, and you know they got to deal with their family. Here's okay. This is from Kevin C. An email. My father-in-law is a COO or a coup. I'm not sure. I think it's a COO of a semi-large company. He's hated Obama from day zero. First, he was from Kenya. Then he was a socialist. Now he's just anti-corporate. How do I respond with Obama hates corporate America?
Well, you know, okay. Obama gave he gave the financial services industry, he green-lighted a bailout that was, what, $12, $13 trillion? I mean, literally every single one, just in terms of Wall Street, every one of these banks that was investing in pulling off this fraud scheme with the mortgage-backed securities, there should have been dozens of people in every one of those companies dragged off to prison for like 10-year terms. And not only did nobody go to prison, not only did nobody get fired under Barack Obama, but his really only response to the financial crisis was to shower everybody with a whole bunch of free money. And when that ran out, when he ran out of money to give them, they printed $2 trillion of money they didn't even have to give to Wall Street. So I don't know how you can say that this guy is not a friend to business. He's been the best friend they could ever have.
And I would add, you know, it would be we should all be so lucky to have people who are so anti us in a quarter when corporate profits are at record highs.
Yeah, exactly.
Just announced
exactly.
Yesterday. Let's see. Let's get to another one. I got a weird one from MS Ms. Columbia Rex. Hi there, Sam Cedar. Have you heard Tiffany Evans' new song, I'll Be There? Check it out if you haven't already. Have you heard Tiffany Evans? Who is Tiffany Evans?
No idea.
Yeah, I'm going to have to
pass.
All right,
we're
going to look
at that
one.
I don't know who Miss Columbia Rex is. Yeah. Okay, here it is. So what great advice – this is from Ron Marcus on Twitter, I think. What great advice for dealing with Tea Party-type relatives during the holidays? What do you do? What do you do? You sit down and somebody's like – you know, the problem is Obama is a socialist, and he's trying to bring this country down because Dinesh D'Souza told me that he's got Nigerian, you know, anti-colonial feelings.
You know what? My editor at Rolling Stone reminded me of a brilliant response that H.L. Mencken used to people who wrote him hate mail. He used to just take a piece of paper and write, dear sir, you may be right, signed H.L. Mencken, and leave it at that. and I find, especially with the Tea Party folks, like there's just, you know, you're not gonna change any minds, right? So just say, yeah, it's true. Let, you know, let's agree to disagree, and
pass the potatoes.
You know, I mean, you may be right. Good luck. You know, mazel tov.
I gotta say that there's always what I always like to do is agree on everything except for find one area where I just slightly undercut their assumptions. Like, you know, here's the key with something like that. You're not going to convert them in one day. What you need to do is plant a seed of doubt that slowly, if you know. There'll be some other – you're going to have to wait for some other acute circumstance that's going to have to impact them where it'll all come tumbling down. So, you know, be your odds – you just got to go for like a 10% odds on something like that.
That's interesting. That's a good strategy too. I like that.
Let's see. There was another one. Let me ask you this. You know what I find that's going around a lot, and I have a feeling you're the type of guy who's sort of fascinated by this too, is that there's a lot of like – a definite increase. It's been around for a long time, but a lot of increase on like the Bilderberger Group, the Trilateral Commission, because this is all sort of like somewhere between Glenn Beck and Alex Jones now, where people are starting to get their hard news. UN Code Number 21, which is all about culling the herd, and then it sort of ties into vaccinations. What do you say to your relatives who say, look, this is all Republicans, Democrats, they are all the same. And we're like, well, maybe I can see the argument because they're all just trying to cull the herd and they're all controlled by the people when they go off to Bohemian Grove.
Yeah, my response to that always is all these theories, they're based on the presupposition that you have to hide something from the American people if you want to commit a crime. I mean, the whole, you know, all the stuff that I do for a living, which is writing about this, you know, actual conspiracies on Wall Street, it's all right out in the open. They don't have to hide this stuff. I mean, that's the beauty of it. You don't have to have a secret meeting with the Bilderbergs or the Trilateral Commission. You just have a, you know, Jamie Dimon and Lloyd Blankfein. They get together. They have a scheduled, you know, announced meeting with the Federal Reserve to chop, you know, decide who gets to have, which company gets to buy Bear Stearns with $30 billion of public money and which doesn't. They don't have to hide this stuff. So, I mean,
right.
That's why 9/11 truth always seems so ridiculous to me, because, you know, as if we'd have to go through all this just to get, you know, get permission from the American people to invade Iraq. I mean, we just do it anyway. You know what I mean? That's my response to that.
Yeah, my biggest problem with the 9/11 truth stuff, and, you know, let's shut down our email servers for a minute, is just that, like, the biggest one that always baffles me is, like, wait, it wouldn't have been enough to just blow up the buildings and have
right,
them, you know, you
right.
had to have the plane, like, yeah, you could blow up the trade towers and they could drop those things with explosives that you planted in the building, but that's not going to be the same type of show. What?
Right. Right, exactly.
Like, I mean, they tried it in 93. Why couldn't they have just sort of made it? Why do they have to go through all the hoops of the airplanes and the this and the that? Why not just blow them up and say somebody
right.
drove a van underneath like they did in 93? That
right.
wouldn't have been. That wouldn't have created the same media buzz.
And actually, think about this. Actually crashing the planes into the building saved thousands and thousands of lives, because almost everybody who died in 9/11 were people
right
who were
in those floors,
in the floors at the plane or above the planes, right?
Right.
And everybody else got to they evacuated and got out before the buildings collapsed. So if you had just blown up the buildings, you would have gotten everybody in both buildings. But anyway, we digress.
Right. Right. All right. Now here's another. Well, yeah, I don't want to spend the whole next week. You know. I'm a gatekeeper because I'm I'm saying this to tens of, you know, several thousands podcasters. I'm the one who's keeping it out of the American public mainstream. All right, here's one more. What do you do when they stray from Tea Party orthodoxy into legitimate criticisms of Obama? My family will surely criticize the bank bailout, stimulus, health care. Of course, they'll hate those things for all the wrong reasons. And this sort of gets to that sort of like that video, the you know, the problem with QE2. The problem with QE2, and add to this, in my estimation, is that money, instead of giving that money to bankers, they should give it to people, because the bankers aren't going to. It's not going to trickle down to us.
Yeah, no, there's that. There's the fact that it's, you know, hyperinflationary has a. You know, you can't just print. There's a reason why people don't just print money to get themselves out of trouble.
Well,
you know?
I will say this. Wait a second. Now, this is where I think you and I disagree on this,
uh-huh.
is that they've already just printed $1 to $2 trillion, essentially.
Right.
I mean, they've done that. And our inflation is still at rock bottom.
Right, but that's because most of that money is still actually technically in the Federal Reserve. It hasn't been released into the economy yet.
Well, I mean, but haven't they given it to? Haven't they basically opened up their window, given money away for 0% interest to banks?
Well, that's different. That's from the discount window. This QE thing, the new money that they're creating, they're crediting accounts at the Federal Reserve, for whenever banks make purchases. So the money actually isn't leaving the Fed yet. Although, I mean, I don't know. I don't understand it completely, but from what I understand, that's the reason why there hasn't been an inflationary effect yet.
Right, but once it starts to trickle out, then you can deal with inflation.
That's true. You're right. Yeah, I mean, we can
debate these issues, I guess, on some level. And, you know, I don't know economics any better than your average person. I'm just going by what I've read from different people who think that the notion of hyperinflation is overblown. And at the same time, you know, I get that email at 1 o'clock in the morning where some guy's going like, it'll happen with a little spike in commodities prices. And then in 24 hours, gasoline will cost $35 a gallon and you know, buy your freeze dried food now. But
yeah, I mean, the only reason it's more real, I actually lived in a country where hyperinflation happened. I was in Russia in 1994 or 5. I can't remember when it was, when the ruble got completely let loose and, you know, it went 10 rubles was suddenly 1,000 rubles. And people who had saved up their money their whole lives under their mattresses were suddenly broke and they could only buy a candy bar like that. So this is still fresh. I mean, it's not fresh in my mind, but it's still back there.
Well, I think the fundamental difference, though, is that we're talking about the ruble and the dollar. And as problematic as the dollar might be, there's nowhere else for people to go. I mean, you can't necessarily, I think, have all the world's money just go into commodities at that point because I don't think commodities can maintain that type of value for too long if there's no currency that's worth anything.
No, I mean, clearly you can't just – yeah, I mean, we saw what happened in 2008. Eventually there's a ceiling to, you know, commodities –
right,
but you know prices. So yeah, you know, you're right.
And
you're right.
It's so speculative. I think that food can be, but be that as it may, what do you do when somebody, when right wingers start criticizing Obama for the right things but for the wrong reasons?
You know, I think it's all right to agree with them. I mean, I think there are a lot of places where I think it's good if Tea Partiers and you know people on the other side can even show solidarity in places. I mean, a great example is you know, they're talking about reforming the way the House works, the House of Representatives, and the Tea Partiers are pressing for all these changes, like they want the Rules Committee hearings to be televised, they want bills to be published 72 hours before they get voted on, they want the Office of Congressional Ethics to be, you know, strengthened. All these things are good things, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, and if they're opposed by Democrats or, you know, or if, I think it's all right to say, yeah, I agree with you there. I
agree, and I think even on criticism of Obama, you know, I think I've had conversations with people about the stimulus, and they're like, the stimulus was bad, and I'm like, well, you know, there was whatever it was, $3 to $4 trillion taken out of the economy. I agree with you, the stimulus was bad. It should have been more. And those, you know, making 40% of it tax cuts is a really inefficient way of juicing the economy, and you know that's a great way to sort of accept the criticism and then say turn it into a criticism from the left, and then things
right,
get really confusing
right.
for everybody at the table. All right, well, listen,
right.
Matt, I'm going to let you go. I really appreciate you spending the time with us and helping out our audience. Deal with those things at Thanksgiving. What do you do? Just here's one more question. What do you do? One of your family members gets really, really drunk and starts talking about, like, you know, some problems they had with another family member.
What do I do? When they, well, you know, as when he starts running his mouth about another family member?
Sure.
Well, record it and play it back for the family member. I mean,
fantastic.
Right?
That's why they have flash video cameras now.
Right,
everybody
exactly.
should be able to record this stuff. And it's something to laugh about at the next holiday or play at a funeral or something like that. It's good. It's wonderful.
Or YouTube it. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Matt Taibbi, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Folks, get the book right now. Apparently it's already out. Some people didn't realize that around here. Griftopia.
You're gonna kick some ass there. So.
Oh yeah, there's gonna be hell to pay. So somebody's gonna have pay is gonna be docked this month. Griftopia, Bubble Machines, Vampire Squids, and the Long Con that is breaking America. And be sure to check out this current piece that's coming out November 25th, in Rolling Stone magazine. Courts helping banks screw over homeowners. Stunning. Stunning story. All right. Thanks a lot, Matt. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot, Sam. Have a good holiday.
So that was Matt Taibbi. I will answer a couple more. He helped us out with a bunch of those questions. I'll answer a couple more. And then we will go to our IMs. Yeah? Does that make sense? Are there any new ones?
Yeah, we've got a couple.
Oh, shit. This was one I wanted to ask Taibbi. How do you deal with those for whom no source is reliable but Fox News? That's coming from D. Williams MH. How do you deal with someone for whom no source is reliable? They will not believe. You could send them to links, the CBO. You can bring to economists. This guy won a Nobel Prize in economics. It's liberal. Of course. Economics. That's a liberal. You know, I only listen to what Megan Fox says because she's got a lot of cleavage, apparently, according to this new photo spread. Or Sean Hannity. How do you deal with this person? Well, I'll tell you how you deal with it. What you need to do is say, oh, yes, Rupert Murdoch, man, I love how much, and then you just go and talk about sort of the immoral shows that they have on Fox. Or you can talk about how, I don't know. I don't know how, I really don't know the answer to that question. How do you undercut Fox News?
I think you just steal their TV and cut your losses.
You just say, yeah, no, that's absolutely, yeah, Glenn Beck, I don't know. I don't know. What do you say? I mean, they don't listen to anybody but Fox News.
Start asking them how they can buy gold, how you can buy gold.
Right. At that point, you just say, like, hey, what's the best way for me to buy gold or dehydrated food or yeah, I don't think there is a way. If someone just believes only in Fox News, I think that's one of the people you just say, like, did you like Bush? You know, just ask him a couple of questions. Just get a feel, you know, sense so that you know for the future, like, what this demographic is. What did you think about George Bush? Wow, Fox News really supported George Bush. No, I hated George Bush. Oh, really? Fox News really, really seemed to support George Bush. No, Sean Hannity used to says all the time now how he didn't like. You know, what I think you got to do is, the only other thing you could say is like, switch them to amnesty. This is my favorite thing to do. You know who really gave, you know, who invented amnesty for undocumented workers, for illegal immigrants? You know who invented amnesty? In fact, the only person who's ever engaged in amnesty in the history of, or at least in modern history, do I know it? You know who it is, right? It's Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan gave amnesty for over 3 million undocumented workers in here. Now, that's like one of those, like, does not compute, Will Roberts, you know, that's where the whole thing sort of melts down. It would be interesting to see what they say on that. If they have an answer for that, you know, you'd say even Fox News admits that. I don't know if they do or not, but I don't watch Fox enough. Social Security's a Ponzi scheme. I already dealt with that one. All I hear is health care reform. This is from, I don't know who this is from. All I hear is health care reform has been shoved down our throats. The American people don't want it and should be repealed. Retort, please. You got it. This is pretty easy. Recent poll just came out. 51% of the American public supports health care. Some of them have a problem with the mandate, but 51% say should not be repealed. I think repeal is only 41%. And after the election, the people who voted in the election, those who said it was a number one priority for their vote, 53% of those people said health care didn't go far enough. So that's that. Somebody suggests, poli-sci junkie suggests, don't talk about policy, but why AU will beat Bama on Friday. Dude, I live in New England. You know, we don't talk about college football. We just don't. Hey, how'd Holy Cross do? Well, they beat BC. That's the only thing that people care. It's just an argument between two Jesuits. That's it. Real Thandra Monkey, my favorite retort, you're entitled to your own opinion, but you can't have your own set of facts. Yeah, that's fine, except for they do. They do have their own set of facts. They only listen to Fox. From Jeremy, is there a way to stream the show on another port? My work's firewall blocks port 8000. I can only listen on my iPhone, which is less than ideal when I'm at work.
Well, we could talk to Kyle.
I have no idea what the hell that means.
We could talk to Kyle that if work blocks port 8000, it may very well block any other port.
Talk to your IT guy.
Yeah.
Any advice on dealing with card-carrying teabagging family members? Welcome. Yeah, we already went there. Spocko's email says, hi, Sam. My advice, ask them a question right off the bat about their premise. Who did I learn this technique from you? From you. Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. I don't know what to say to that. That's very nice. Oh, well, thank you. Oh, thank you. Very cool. Yes, ask them to define their terms. ask them some question that you think may surprise them. I don't know how to. Hey, Sam. Okay, this is a great question. I don't have the classic right-wing relative to argue with over the holidays, but my sister, who's studying to be an animal rights lawyer, has some crazy ideas about expanding the death penalty. She imagines that there's such a thing as a single gene that determines whether a person will become a sex offender, and she wants all of these men or boys, she added, to be sentenced to death after a first offense. She also wouldn't mind screening fetuses for this trait so they can be aborted. I told her schemes like this never work, that those regimes are always overthrown, and that once it was believed that Jewishness was a genetic defect and a drain on society which could be solved in one generation. At one point she actually said, the Nazis ruined eugenics by being over-inclusive.
Hey, what happened?
I don't even know how to respond to this, really. Where is that? What is it?
What are you talking about?
I'm not a super pro-life guy, but I know that innocent men will always be killed if we don't get rid of the death penalty, and the genetic testing component makes it extra creepy. How do I win this argument with my otherwise liberal crypto-fascist sister? I don't think you do. I think you sort of slowly back away from the table, frankly. The only answer to this is, and I don't know if she's right about this gene, but, you know, genes aren't 100% determinative of anything, are they? I mean, other than maybe certain physical features, but in terms of behavior, I think it's wrong to kill people for that. I don't think fetuses are people. And so, you know, abortions in general, I don't have a moral problem with, or, but I think imposing the death penalty on sex offenders, I think, is barbaric. But I think the other problem with a regime like this is, like, you know, what, it's a little bit whimsical, you know, because there's probably somebody out there somewhere having the same conversation about lawyers. And that would be problematic if you became a lawyer. Yes, but my answer to you would be just drink heavily during the meal and just back away. If you start to feel yourself getting a little carried away, maybe take some type of sedative. Because I don't know if you can win that one. If Obama, I'll read some more of these after into the post show. We went a little long today. Folks, have a great Thanksgiving. You can IM me at Sam Cedar Show or at Majority FM. I'm cranking up my IM right now. Tomorrow, we will have some archives, stuff that you haven't heard in a long time. David Cross and Chalmers Johnson, Wendell Potter. Some great book shows. I was just looking over some of those. Maybe we'll have Juan Cole or Jeffrey Toobin or on the Supreme Court or, oh gosh, there's some great, we've got some great interviews that we'll load up. We'll half hour, 45 minutes of great new podcast material. And we will see you on Monday. If you have the opportunity to join as a member, always, always appreciated. We just got an offer for a Intel-based Mac computer. We're so super psyched. Thank you for your generosity. Buy some Just Coffee and have a great Thanksgiving. If you're traveling in any way, please travel safe. And we'll be back live on Monday. Hey, you can IM me at Sam Cedar Show. Oh, and the Sam Cam is in effect now, right? We have sound hooked up? Sound will be hooked up in just a moment. You can IM me at Majority FM, Cedar MBS. I just turned it on, so we may not have many IMers today. Hey, folks, if you're listening to this podcast, send us an email. Do you like hearing this part on the podcast? Are there some of you who would just rather it was shorter? Let us know. We always take your advice. We could put it into two podcasts. Would that be a bummer? Maybe we could just do a short version and a long version.
Doable.
I don't know if that might undercut our ranking on iTunes. That would.
Probably.
We'll figure that out. Now, wait, what am I looking at now, Dorsey? I'm looking at there's something on the Majority Reporters at gmail.com site?
Yeah.
Income disparity?
No. We got
Thanksgiving advice?
Thanksgiving advice. The other one
Fenton Muley.
Fenton Muley. That's a good question. I think you could probably
You know who Fenton Muley is, right? No? You guys are obviously not familiar with home movies. The character Fenton Muley, it's misspelled here by John, who emails us. Don't know if you're still taking questions. Bren! That's the Fenton Muley trademark, Bren. Tried to get my dad to watch the Shock Doctrine movie on demand a while back. The description mentioned it was about the global failings of capitalism, and he accused me of being a socialist. How can I dispel this John Birch-esque myth of the perfection of laissez-faire free market capitalism and the evils of socialism? So sick of hearing the socialist slur every time I suggest the government might have a positive role in something. Well, John from Mississippi, back when I had sideburns, my father asked me if I was a communist because of my sideburns. Well, the first thing I would say is, quote, Alan Greenspan, the maestro, recently said in 2008, I think it was, or 2009 in Senate hearings, that his worldview that markets always function correctly and left alone where the best answer was incorrect. He's had to reevaluate this. So first I would start with Alan Greenspan, because if your father is a fundamentalist free marketer, quoting, you know, and listen, here's the thing. When you approach someone like this, you always got to get the ground rules down first. So in other words, you say something like, so you believe in free market fundamentalism like espoused by Alan Greenspan. Yes, I do. Alan Greenspan's the maestro. And then you come in with that quote from Greenspan. Because these guys are going to want to say, well, Greenspan, he's old now. You know, something like that. And then you say, do you believe in Social Security? Do you believe in train travel? Do you believe in roads? Do you believe in anything that is provided to us by the aggregate, the sum of our tax dollars that could only be organized by government? There would not be a highway system. You know, it depends on where you live in Mississippi, John. Do you live in a rural area? Because I got news for you. Ain't nobody's going to build a road. If you live in a rural area, there's no value in building roads to you. There just isn't. If you're on a lonely road, there's no value in somebody building a road there. You're not going to find a private company that's going to go and build that road. You won't find a private company that's going to go and deliver your mail for what the post office does. FedEx will do it, but they're extremely expensive. And you know what? FedEx is having problems now. And they're going to cut back. You're going to see it's going to be that much more expensive. So your postal is subsidized. You probably wouldn't have cable service if you have cable service. Because to carry cable in certain areas, the government forces them to give cable out to a certain parameters. They really should be forcing them more. Internet would not exist were it not for government spending. Tang. There'd be no Tang. Yeah, who would go and try and invent Tang? Nobody. Income disparity. How do you respond to the argument, it could be worse argument? As in the U.S., poor aren't really poor compared to third world countries because they have televisions and fast food. Well, that's not an income disparity comment. Yes, they could be as poor as people in third world countries. But the problem with income disparity is that it creates social unrest. It creates, it precedes collapses of societies. And what is the point of America? If you're saying that we're okay because our poor are not as poor as, like, Ethiopian poor, what is the point of America? Why are we spending more than double what the rest of the world spends in defense? What are we protecting? You say the point of America is that we're better. Now, I'm not one of these exceptionalists, but you need to argue on their terms. And the point is that we're supposed to be better than this. This income disparity, this is not a, it doesn't end here. This is a process, and either you compress the income into a less of a wider bandwidth, I guess, is the way to, right? Or it just keep getting worse until it becomes unsustainable. And you also, the fact of the matter is, you lose democracy. The less economic stability the middle class has, the less democracy we all have. Do the entire show on podcast a few days ago, and the post show wasn't there. I was bummed. What? When was that? I listened to the podcast a few days ago, and the post show wasn't there. I was bummed. How is that possible? That's not true. Post show has always been there.
Yeah.
Dave, write back and let us know what day you're talking about, because that's wrong.
Yeah, we'll check it out.
I like the IM as part of the main broadcast, says Gulfstream 2. Fair enough. I am not going to accept any unknown verification crypto scripts. I don't know what the hell that means. Please keep the post show and the podcast, or at least continue to offer to subscribers. Oh, no, it'll always be available to subscribers. I'm just wondering. It's still entertaining even on days I'm not available to listen to it live. I won't be up so early in the morning here. Okay, bye-bye. David Axelrod, Nefertiti, reports that he's leaving his job sooner than planned. Pre-Thanksgiving news dump. Interesting tidbit. Now you log in, says McMahon, 81. Axelrod's going to Chicago, right?
Yes.
to run the campaign. They probably realize, like, we need all the help we can get with this. Super Funk, fantastic interview with Matt. When it comes to economic topics, I get lost, but maybe a link to show conservative relatives, ReaganBushDebt.org. Oh, yes. Nobody asked about, you know, the deficit and the debt. George Bush took surpluses, gave tax cuts on the advice of Alan Greenspan to keep the government from getting surpluses, raised the debt ceiling five times, took the national debt from $4 trillion to $10 trillion, increased it far greater than Obama, and did so at a time of supposed economic expansion. He cut taxes, it created no new jobs. He cut taxes, all it did was create a 35% of the debt, the deficit, excuse me, is a function of those taxes. It did not bring in new revenues. So that's an easily debunked one.
Well, yeah, I know. Bush wasn't conservative.
How many minutes after Obama was elected did you decide that? Kevin, only believe Fox News. Remind them that it's the second largest owner is a Muslim. Oh, yes, from the Saudi royal family, whose kingdom group finances the building of mosques in America. There you go. Thank you, Kev. Huck Finn, I'll IM you. Okay, fair enough. Utilitopia, suburbia itself is heavily subsidized. Is this sustainable? Kunstler Crast. Yes. Right. You know that Clusterfuck Nation? I think he's changed the name so that it's a little bit more marketable. But Jim Kunstler, who lives up upstate, across the river. Todd Slater. I like having the post-show on the podcast, one file, just my 2 cents. But why no audio on the Sammy Cam until the post-show? It would be great to have the audio for the whole show. We might get there. We might get there. That may be... Oh, we could probably do that now. We may end up sequestering the Sammy Cam for members only.
And another part of it is trying to keep track of how many people are listening so we know what our
allocations are. We're also trying to figure out some bandwidth allocations to project into the future. Thank you, Evan, for that more technical answer. SPAF, I had heard so much from Matt Taibbi lately that I don't think I could get much from another interview, but you surprised me again. Oh, well, I don't know what to say. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I took much more from your interview than any of the previous interviews with Matt Taibbi. Wait. Okay, fair enough. And I love having the after show. It's nice to have a host who cares what his listeners think. Even some liberal hosts have a habit of not really listening to their callers because they're so busy trying to make their point. We're going to have phone calls on the show, folks. How quickly we get there is, to be honest, a function of how many members we get. I mean, this is... you know, we're not receiving any subsidies from Soros. We were out the other night having dinner, and I made a untoward joke that apparently was inappropriate, and Soros cut off all our funding. Look, let me just say this, okay, in my own defense. People fart. They pass gas, and I think that's funny. And excuse me if George Soros doesn't think it's funny and doesn't want to fund my show. Harold. Ah, man, yesterday was great. I signed up for a subscription. Oh, thank you. I don't know what that means, nah, man. But okay. D-Rad. You should have heard of All the Devils Are Here, The Hidden History of the Financial Crisis. You should interview the authors of the book. One of them was on Democracy Now! Briefly, and it sounded quite interesting. We write that down. All the Devils Are Here. I would love. That's a great suggestion.
Check it out.
Some show advice. Don't be a puss. Some of your best rants actually happening during the post-show. You should definitely keep it with the show. And don't worry about the show being too long. Howard Stern does 5 hours a day. And very soon will smash all preconceived notions about how much people are willing to pay for a podcast.
Ooh.
I estimate you could convert 22% of your Twitter followers to paid subscribers and at an average revenue of $12.50 a month. Another retort for Fox viewers. That Shepard Smith seems a little light in the loafers. Well, that's not right. I mean, it's accurate, but it's not right. Wait a second. How do you estimate I could convert 22% of your show followers to paid subscriptions at an average revenue of $12.50 a month?
Is that a spam bot? That's a good one.
That's a, listen, send me those numbers. Send me those numbers right now. Somebody get a calculator.
Calculator's out of battery.
Say, baby, put down that pipe and get my pipe up.
You can send us the send me at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We're gonna have changes for you. We're gonna take that that site right there, right? That Majority Reporters Tumblr, and we're gonna put it on the back end of our site. Folks, we're gonna give you an opportunity as a Majority Reporter, member or not, to create, have a platform. Because, you know, people, we have some amazing posters. People have gone on to do Blue Roots Radio, and there's several podcasts I think they're doing now. Bloggers from the old Majority Report, Sam Cedar Show, Cedar on Sundays, Sunshine Jim. There's a whole crew. Nobody, if he's out there, I don't want to leave anybody. You know, J. David Lara had a who's been helping us out with some of the research, had a podcast that I think he's on hiatus. But there's been so many. I know I'm leaving a bunch of people out, but we have so many great people who are just digging up so much information. I get so much information from our blog, and we decided, you know, we're going to create a sort of dedicated area to that. So, you know, whereas the majority.fm becomes sort of a chat room on some level, and also a great way to get links out there, we're going to have a more dedicated site for that type of content. Okay, wait a sec. Okay, another. That's about $35,000 a month. I understand. Okay, don't be a puss that wants to help us out. All right. Yes. No. I can do the math. The 22% of my Twitter followers are $12.50 a month. It's just that getting there. But don't be a puss. Email us. I just don't want to have to spam anybody. Pluger, less democracy, right? With increasing economic security, people are more free to exercise their political will. Along with that fact, money, especially after Citizens United, can overwhelm elections. Yes, of course. Tell your right-wing level, benevolent spung. Tell your right-wing relatives that stuffing and mashed potatoes originated in Kenya, and reap the leftovers. I don't think that's true, is it? I don't know. But I see what you're saying. Yeah, I wouldn't eat that. Oh, that dessert, that cheesecake. That's, you know, that's originally a socialist dish. There are enzymes in cheesecake which turn you socialist. That's all I'm saying. How to deal with Fox viewing right-wingers, says Earl Camembert. As per your recent guest, Jonathan Weiler, you have to tap into their authoritarian vulnerabilities, sympathies, traits. Treat them like simpering fools they are. Make them give you 40 push-ups. Lick your shoes and then command them to make a contribution to NPR and subscribe. At a minimum, dirty effing hippie level to your show. Right. That's right. When you go back to Thanksgiving, I hope you're recruiting your family to join. Oh, and you know what we got to do is also, I need you to, Dorsey, to give me a, give me that Bush pardon thing, because over the weekend I'm going to make a video. I'm going to post it. And it'll be an explanation of the benefit for people. Both like an ad and an explanation of the benefit. McMahon, I got a complaint yesterday at my job when I put up a turn off Fox sticker in my cubicle. Wow, in your cubicle?
Does he work at Fox?
How do you handle the uber right-wing Jewish point of view when their excuse is the Holocaust? Well, I'm not sure exactly what you're talking about, but Israel's in worse shape now following these, you know, what's clear is their occupation of these territories has not helped. And what I genuinely believe is that Israel is the greatest existential threat to Israel as a democratic Jewish state is the fact that their citizenry is becoming, there's a greater number of Arabs. And there's going to have to be a two-state solution if Israel wants to maintain its democratic Jewish nature. Otherwise, it becomes not a democratic state, which, of course, is what, you know, why we're supposedly always supporting of them in America. You've already won the Jewish battle with your right-wing Jewish mashpacha, because they want Israel to stay a Jewish state. And you can just tell them the greatest danger to Israel is for them to lose their status as a democratic state. And they are losing it. I mean, in many respects, in my opinion, they have lost a lot of it. Let's put it that way. But your right-wing mishpucha will not accept that premise. So you've got to say, at one point demographics are going to catch up with them, and they know that. And then they'll say, well, Rabin was going to give, Ehud Barak was going to give them 98.3% of the West Bank. But ask them how they would enjoy their house if they had no running water. And then talk about how important that other 1.7% is. When you say, we're going to give you all the rights to this land, but, you know, the parts where the water's coming in the desert, yeah, we own that. That's just what we're going to do. Any discussion relating to Israel and the U.S., I agree. Okay. Macma, here's the sticker. Posted on our blog, Spaff, when I said this was a better interview, I did not mean better than your other interviews, I meant better than some of the MSNBC interviews with it. Well, you know, that's the beauty of this format, frankly, be it either radio or especially the podcast, is that I can be a little bit looser. And, you know, Matt, I've known for a long time. I don't know him personally. You know, I mean, I know him. He's been in studio, and I hang out, and I, you know, have a sense of his personality, and we can have more fun. And, don't be a putt, Sam. You mentioned yesterday that you are pretty religious. Really? Really? I don't believe it. Did you have a bar mitzvah? I did. I had a bar mitzvah. I went to Hebrew school until I was like 16. It's confirmed. Got into a little trouble with the rabbis for our confirmation class to raise money to go to Israel. I, at the time, was doing a, I guess I was about 14 or 15 at this point. And I was doing, I would do Rodney Dangerfield routines. And I just memorized a bunch of Rodney Dangerfield jokes. And I had no plan, you know, when I was going up on stage. I just did them as they came to my head. And I'm in the Stacy A. Cohen Youth Center at Temple Emmanuel in Worcester with the rabbis and the families from the class. And I'm on a roll, and I'm doing my, you know, get a respect. I'd seen Ronnie Dangerfield at the Chateau de Ville with Charlie Fisher's Charlie Fisher and his older brother. And then went to go see NRBQ or something. I can't remember. It's all a blur. And I'm doing the bit. And I'm just doing joke after joke after joke, you know, and I can't even remember the jokes except for this one. Send my kids to college. He's majoring in fucking off. And I heard this. As people realize, like, I just said fucking off in front of, as a 13 or 14-year-old, in front of the rabbis and a group full of parents. But, yes, I went to Israel. Been to Israel two or three times, but at that time it's confirmation. And I actually saw the helicopters in 1980. Going over Caesarea, laying low on the Mediterranean to attack Beirut. And got into a huge argument with the rabbi about this. It was very upsetting to me. and, you know, I think to one or two of us. I don't know why I was, I mean, I guess I must have been, I was fairly politically sort of at least attuned at that point, and, you know, just thought that the attacking Beirut didn't make sense to me. You know, aggressive wars didn't make sense to me from an Israeli standpoint. A little alienated from the rabbis. But what are you going to do? And then I got diarrhea, and we got into a big fight about whether or not I can have butter on my toast. It was all that type of thing. Torresy 80. Obama has pardoned a turkey, but no people. He has formally denied 71 pardon requests and 605 commutation requests set over by the Justice Department for his consideration. Yeah, I mean, I would need to look at him on a case-by-case basis, but it sounds like, you know, more defensiveness on his part. Jay Bolisk, you should consider having a segment in the post-show maybe where you pay homage to your various voiceover characters. Home Movies, Lucy Daughter of the Devil, DJ Jesus' sidekick character sort of looks like a Sam Cedar spoof. Is that your voice? Is that that fake commercial part that says "Holy guacamole"? I don't remember. Wasn't there another animated series you were a central character? I want to say Western themed. Wow, Saddle Rash. Yes, that was on one episode. And I'm now actually doing a voice in Bob's Burgers. I think I'm on like seven of the first ten. Here's the problem with me doing a sample of all my voiceover characters. It would become clear that I don't have a sample of voiceover characters. I have like one, maybe two. So I would never expose myself in that way. Sam, why do you think some of these mega-rich, benevolent dudes like Buffett don't mount a progressive media network to compete with Fox? Like on TV, it's a lot of money to waste with no payoff. You know, Rupert Murdoch gets his money back in other ways when he, you know, subsidizes the Post, the tune of like whatever, $9, $10, $20 million a year. I don't know why they don't do that. Because I suspect that they don't agree with as much, you know. They're not willing to let their base hang out like, you know, the right wing lets their base hang out. And, you know, look, fair taxation policy is one thing. Economic populism is another. And I think there's something inherently, like, even at Air America, my premise, my theory about Air America is that every owner that came in there did it in part because of ideological grounds, in part because of business grounds, but the part that trumped those was always some personal agenda. And not a nefarious one, but, you know, they were driven by something, and everybody is, I guess, but it was something that interfered in this case, whether it was like, I think if I become the owner of this, I will become an important liberal figure. I'll be like seen like Arianna Huffington, or I will. You know, this is a good way for me to remain relevant in the public eye because I used to do something like be a politician or something, I have made my money basically because it was given to me, and I've made some investment choices. But I want to see if I can really prove to myself that I can make money. And even though I have no particular idea for this, I can go and hire a consultant with a shiny watch and nice shoes, I am a con man. And I can make this work as long as I keep investors out and see if I can get some cash in quick. Now, I would say it's arguable as to whether or not this endeavor is actually sort of very similar to the first incarnation of Air America. Like, guys, did I show you the flowchart, Evan, Dorsey?
No.
I said, you guys are very high up in the flowchart. I want you to know that. Whatever you guys want. Just put it on the account. The majority report account. Don't worry about a thing. Whatever you say, guys. Drab Mathis, forgot to say thanks to the S-Work for the TSA. That was indeed, that interview was indeed vastly superior to any interview with a TSA official I've heard before. You got to really open up about the real motivations behind the security measures. Thank you. Don't be a putz. I had a bar mitzvah too, but I'm totally an atheist. Now we know they're the only ones who can stand up for the Palestinians here without being called anti-Semite. People like Amy Goodman, Naomi Klein, Chomsky, I like to think of you as part of that group. I share, I think, some of their perspectives, but I don't know that I belong in that. Those people are all far more intelligent, far more accomplished journalists and authors, but I like to feel like, hey, somebody's got to be, somebody's got to be less sophisticated than them, and, you know, it takes all types, and so I'm happy. I see it as a series of concentric circles, and I don't necessarily feel like I am in the same concentric circle of those people, but it's important that people like me outside of that concentric circle appreciate them and, you know, give them a platform. So, but thank you. It's very, very flattering. Okay, let me do one or two more, and then I get, oh, Sam, a tip. The most successful Ponzi schemes don't typically reveal their nature to potential members. Well, that's true, too. Social Security is completely transparent. Everybody knows exactly how much it is. There's a report that's put out. If you actually look at that report, I'm going to get too wonky here at the end of the show. There are three levels of projections, A, B, and C. We always get the B-level projection, which has, over the 70 years of those projections, been consistently more conservative about the growth rate of this country than in general. Now, over the past couple of years, the trust fund has, its solvency has gone from 2041 to 2037 because we've just suffered the most cataclysmic economic situation we've had since the Great Depression. If things pick up, even in 5 or 10 years, let's hope they come earlier, that number could go back, keep going, climbing back up into the future. So, but go read the Social Security Trust Fund report if you ever get a chance. It's fun. Fun stuff. Okay, last one. Jay Bob, let's bring back the best of your old Majority Report, Sam Cedar Show, Cedar on Sundays. Bits, the morning zoo, some of those phone calls. Yes. When are we going to hear from Lauren? We're going to have soon, right, Evan?
I'll see what I can do.
Yeah. Sam, you got to get set up for callers. I really miss the callers. I do, too. Like I say, we will have right, there would be callers calling in thinking that guy was for real. We will have callers, I promise you. It may not happen until the beginning of the year. May happen sooner, depending on really how many memberships we sell. All right, folks, thank you so much. Have a great weekend. Remember, tomorrow there will be a podcast up. It will be material that you haven't heard in ages, so it's going to feel new to you, except for it could be Chalmers Johnson, who's just passed away, in which case that would be weird. But thank you so much for your support. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Don't listen to anybody who tells you you're eating too much. Just be careful. Have safe travels. And we'll be back live on Monday. Feel free to email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com.